I pitched it to Business Insider and they picked it up and they published it, but I've never used that tactic ever again.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
Happy Monday morning, everyone. It's time for another exciting episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I am Dan Franks, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra, coming on shortly. But before we get started on today's showdown, Joe and I are super excited to announce a collaboration that we're working on with two of our favorite podcast hosts, and that would be Cynthia Sanchez from Oh So Pinteresting podcast and Jared Easley from the Starve the Doubts podcast. And what we're doing is called the Holiday Mashup, where the three of us are mashing up our podcasts together. And what it's turning into is three exciting live Google Hangout events the first three Tuesday evenings of December 2013, where you guys can join us live as we record our mashup podcasts together and even have a chance to participate through asking questions and maybe even get yourself on the air. So to find out more about that project and those events and how you can become a part of it, head over to holidaymashup.net. Or, as always, you can find the information on entrepreneurshowdown.com. But now, on to the matter at hand. In round one, Joe and I are going to discuss how you can get your first 100 readers to your blog. And if your blog or website already has 100 readers, then maybe what steps you can take to get the next 100, the next 1,000, maybe even the next 10,000. So Joe and I will weigh in on that and hear what you guys think. For round two, Joe and I are going to discuss a recent episode of the Think, Act, Get podcast. Now, we've already had James Schramko on a few months ago, but his co-host on the Think, Act, Get podcast is Ezra Firestone. And Ezra is known as a marketing and an e-commerce genius. So the episode of Think, Act, Get we're going to talk about is the marketing episode. So we're going to kind of have a marketing-centric talk. And then, of course, in the main event, we're going to bring on that man himself, Ezra Firestone, to get even deeper in marketing. And Ezra is one of the coolest cats we've ever had on the show. And he's just got a completely different take on life and business and everything. So you definitely don't want to miss this, because if you hear generic marketing, it might sound a little plain Jane. But if you know anything about Ezra Firestone, you know Ezra is anything but plain Jane. So stick around for that. And for the show notes of today's episode, and to find out about our new 5x5 training toolkit that's actually been getting super great reviews. A lot of people have been thanking us for the content and digging in even deeper and asking us more questions. For all of that, you can head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. But without wasting any more time, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
For round one today, we're looking at blogging, because everyone loves to blog. And the problem with, I guess, blogging articles nowadays is that they all kind of run together, kind of sound the same. And so I was looking to read yet another one of those, because I use my time wisely, called How to Get Your First 100 Blog Readers. And what actually stuck out really quick was that it's actually very straightforward, tactical type stuff. And this is written by Stan Smith, the founder of Pushing Social, which is a very popular social media blogging type site. Because he breaks down, okay, 0 to 100, here's what he did. 100 to 1,000, here's what he did. So on and so forth, up to 10,000. And some of it is actually, it's stuff that you kind of just brush off and you don't really think about. And some stuff is kind of like make sure you tweet out your links and everything like that. That's pretty straightforward. But one thing that stood out to me was using a pop culture mashup template, which is for him, for Stan, it's take something that's very relevant, a pop culture reference, and put it into and tie it into some form of the topic that you're doing, because people will automatically click to it. And that's really interesting for me, because the one time I did use this, I wrote an article of combining Shark Tank with like the job search, and I pitched it to Business Insider and they picked it up and they published it, but I've never used that tactic ever again. And it's, I don't know why. Well, I haven't, but
that's something that we've used on our show before though, right? We've used that for the Ashton Kutcher and his big speech at an award show that was leading into his Steve Jobs role in a upcoming movie he had.
Yeah.
And then another time we've used it, I think even more successfully, was with Lady Gaga. And we talked about how her marketing tactics could be translated to business. So those were examples similar. We weren't just like I think the way Stan's talking about doing it is more really just having your own article, but maybe leaning on the pop culture reference or using a photograph of a pop culture figure or something like that to really just almost accent what your actual topic is. Whereas the way we've done it before is maybe using that pop culture reference more heavily for whatever our topic was. But I think they're both similar, that you're drawing on something else to help bring attention to what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, right now we've already reached over 100 podcast listeners. So, and you can check out some of the texts we use in our 5x5 package if you want to sign up for that at entrepreneurshowdown.com. But for blogging, we're kind of just beginning to get some like written content out there and trying to build up a audience just for more of the writing type stuff. And we kind of figured, because we'd done blogging before we started this, that we kind of knew a lot of different things. But when you actually break it down to, okay, for the first 100 readers, this is what you're going to do exactly. Don't worry about all the other crap. Just do these three things. It actually makes it a little more easier, and actually makes it, when you think about it, not as overwhelming, because the first 100 readers are usually the hardest, because then usually it snowballs after that.
Well, here's something, and we picked this out because it's super tactical, and sometimes we're a little more woo-woo with our topics or something like that. We're not as tactical. But since this is tactical, I really picked up on something that I'm going to immediately begin doing that Stan did, and he would update his email signature line for whatever his latest headline of his blog posts is. So whenever he published a new blog post, he would then go and update his email signature line to have that tagline at the bottom. So instead of just having his URL of his website or something like that, he would actually have the headline in a clickable form that would take people to his website. So, I mean, how many hundreds of emails do we send out every week to people that probably aren't current visitors of our site, that a good number of those would like it? So if you can catch their attention with something like that, you could convert a reader right there, just without even, you know, you're not in their face about it. If they don't want to click it, they don't have to, but it's there. And if it catches their attention, hey, you might get a new reader right there.
That actually is really smart, because usually I just put Entrepreneur Showdown and put the link on the bottom, and I don't know how, I'm not tracking any type of link clicks from that, but it's not very exciting. It's more just for me to think, to be like, oh, well, look, we have a site that kind of gives us social proof. But if you put the title of the post, or maybe it's the guest or whatever, and maybe they're having a problem in that area, or they're thinking about that topic, they're going to click it no matter what. And so,
And let's say someone emails Joe at entrepreneurshowdown.com because they had a comment on the latest podcast. Maybe they're not super familiar with that we have a website, that you and I both blog at our website, that we have two episodes a week that week or something like that. Maybe it is just that headline that they say, oh, this looks like something different than what I just listened to. Yeah, exactly. So anything like that, other than like, because obviously they know that that's your web address because they just emailed you at that web address. But with that headline, it just opens up another door. So I think it's a good use of that space that maybe a lot of people aren't using.
Yeah, that's smart. And it's so simple. Yeah, it's a little tedious, but I mean, if you just start getting like a couple people here and there, you'll get to your 100 readers. Maybe it'll take a while, but I'd never even thought of doing something like that, just because, I don't know, like you see, and I know there's plugins for like in the comment section, I don't remember what the plugin's called, but after you type your comment, it automatically pull from your website the first recent post or something, and people are able to then click that, and I think that has decent clicks. But this was interesting to me, because I thought when I started reading, I was going to be like, well, they're going to tell you to go and comment on places and whatever. And he does say go to blog forums and start answering a question a day, which which I wouldn't go to a how to blog forum. I think I'd have to figure out what one we'd go to provide our expertise. We'll have to brainstorm that. I don't know what kind of forum we'd look for.
Yeah, but there's we wouldn't do the how to blog forum because obviously we're not, that's not what we talk about. But there are entrepreneur forums out there. I mean, so you regularly visit MJ DeMarco's website and his forum. So I don't know if you post there frequently, but that would be a certain place to do that at.
Well, his is a little trickier because usually a lot of the people at post, which actually I should, because a lot of people who post there are really successful people. So I should be doing that anyway and just building a relationship there. But there's not too much, I guess, podcast talk. It's more straight business. But for networking type thing and for people who already have connections, that's actually a really smart place that I should be going to anyway, which I haven't. Well, so.
And say you're there just trying to learn, because like you said, there's a lot of experts there. But if you were to, in your forum signature, have the headline, well, that might be complete. You're not, you don't have to be involved with podcasting talk for that headline and then to catch someone's email attention. So you could do that same tactic at your signature on the forum.
Very true, actually. Fine. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, do that. Well, I wanted to ask you, because you've made comments to me about this before, but this whole, I guess, roundup blog post, because Stan mentions that he does these and they work. And his and if anyone doesn't know what that is, it would be like gathering your top five most popular, or it would be like gathering your five favorite blog posts of the week and kind of linking out to those. And Stan specifically says a lot of bloggers hate these, but readers still love them. And you've made comments to me before that you don't like those, or you think they're kind of spammy or cheesy, but he does recommend it and says it works.
For me, I find it depends on what it's, I don't know if we're just talking about roundup or list posts or if they're the same thing, but I guess for me when it's, oh, here's the top 10 podcasts that I listen to or some roundup like that, just to kind of get attention, I don't think a lot of people really like that. I think that's more to get on the people's radar. But stuff like list posts, which is, this is actually kind of a list post-ish. I do think they're a little overdone. But yeah, a lot of people read them. It's just a lot of people who try and do list posts to go viral. A lot of the ones that are numbered are crappy. Like there may be like one or two good, like A and B may be good, but C through F through Z is horrific. So that's why I get a little disgruntled with stuff like that, because you can tell people are trying to write the 100 reasons you should start a podcast, and the first 15 are the real reasons, and then the last 85 are just garbage. And it's more, yeah, just to get that like viral effect. So if it's done right, I appreciate a good list post, but definitely check it out. I was on Zite, which is a good app. Go download it. And I was just going through it, and I saw the title, and I was like, this is going to be another lame one. But I don't know why I clicked it. It's Linkbait. But I clicked it. I read through it, and I was like, this is really tactical stuff. And I know that our audience would love it, especially if you are blogging and you're just trying to start off, just like kind of like we are. We're trying to build our blogging part as well. And I thought it was really interesting. So make sure you check it out. But in the meantime, stay around, because we're going to go on to round two.
Round two.
Today in round two, Joe and I are looking at episode 32 of the Think, Act, Get podcast, which is Ezra Firestone and prior guest James Schramko's podcast. And as we discussed when we interviewed James, they pick a topic, and it can be really any topic, and they discuss the actions related to these topics and just have a really in-depth talk about the idea of the topic or whatever it is. And the topic of this episode is marketing, and they discuss kind of at top level what marketing is, and they don't really dig too deep. And Ezra is a really accomplished marketer in the e-commerce space as well as the online space. So we're bringing Ezra on in the main event today to discuss a little deeper, more in-depth conversation, I should say, about what marketing means to him and really get deep and tactical with him. But in this round two, Joe and I will probably keep it a little top level because we're not expert marketers. But Joe, just to kick things off, when you hear the word marketing, what does that mean to you?
Well, and this is something they talked about. When I think marketing, I just think visibility and being able to, for other people to just see your name. That's what I think. I guess, yeah, kind of like marketing, branding type thing. That's what I think.
So there's no monetary component in your idea of marketing as a generic topic.
Well, after listening to this, like, I understand like the definition a little more, but I always just thought, yeah, it's not, it's just about what, like, getting your name out there and just so people can see it. And I know they talk about in this, James's definition was marketing was knowing you exist and that you solve their problems. But like for me, whenever I think marketing, I always think, okay, what's like the big marketing campaigns? And then I think of like the Super Bowl ads and like Doritos, they always just have funny commercials, and that's just marketing for their name. They're not solving a problem or anything. They just have funny commercials. And so whenever I thought of marketing, I was just like, okay, whoever gets like the best attention from their ad or whatever, they have better marketing than someone who has a very boring ad. That's what I always thought it was.
See, and I'm kind of with you on this. When I heard James say that, I never actually envisioned focusing on the monetary aspect when you just think of marketing as a whole. I always thought more visibility. So if you did something to get your thoughts or your ideas or your brand name or your personal name or whatever it is that you are marketing in the eyes and the ears of the people, then you've marketed successfully. But James really does have the idea of not only marketing so that they know who you are, but also what you're doing and what you're going to do to solve whatever problem they have. So that's a little more targeted than what you or I had in mind.
Well, and Ezra also talks about how marketing also has to go hand in hand with conversions, and he also talks about repeat business and margins and everything like that. And he talks even a little bit about how his podcast at Think Act Get has been a great tool for marketing and for conversions and everything like that. And so that definitely perked up my ears, because maybe that's a topic we can get into, how it's helped their marketing, because that's of course something we're interested in. And yeah, going back again, I didn't really think of anything in like, okay, that you have to think about conversions and margins or and he even mentions a lot of people think it's just about visibility, and I guess that's what I thought too. Like when I think, okay, we got to market this podcast, I immediately just think, what's the best way we can get on the front page of whatever this site, or get linked to in this article or this area or newspaper or whatever. That's what I think, because I'm just thinking if we can just get visibility, then we're more likely to increase our downloads and whatnot. But it sounds like he doesn't think that's the key. So, and we'll ask him about that, like, what's wrong with just visibility, and how come most people, why do they think that visibility is the only thing, and why isn't it? And we'll dive into that with him.
Yeah, and we might be thinking of this or looking at this from a more shallow, less in-depth point of view, because right now we are only worried about downloads and visibility. And, you know, we say visibility, but to us that conversion is two downloads, and what we're going for kind of stops at that. But I think you and I are both, we're working on behind the scenes some ways to, you know, get something to convert people to. So maybe purely because we don't have anything to convert people to at this time, that's why we kind of stopped our thoughts at that. But I did like what Ezra was talking about, and you mentioned it briefly, this idea that I kind of dubbed pre-marketing, which is almost like laying the foundation to position yourself as some kind of authority, and how they use their pod, how Ezra specifically said he uses the podcast to build this authority. So then when he comes in with a product or a webinar or some kind of talk, he's automatically got that credibility built up. And so then whenever he begins the real marketing, you know, that he's maybe putting money in or really trying to heavy sell someone with something, he's already developed that foundation through this pre-marketing channel. So I really want to talk to him about that, you know, like I keep saying, what I call pre-marketing.
Yeah. And this is, again, just, it's a very general topic. So, I mean, we could probably go a lot of different ways when we talk with Ezra. So I think, yeah, if we start in that point and ask about the podcasting as well, it'll probably lead to a lot of other discussions, because we're newbie marketers, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, they want some tips. But I mean, even just from past interviews, I look at when I see an ad on like on the TV, like I automatically see it different, because I'm looking at the copy and I'm thinking, okay, why would they use that tagline? What does that do? And it's an interesting topic. Even if you're not that interested in marketing, if you're going to sell anything or try and get people to get directed to your site or whatever, you have to know how to do it. And so it's definitely just a skill to pick up and learn.
Yeah, and I think kind of to lead into this interview, and then we'll throw it to Ezra, is we're not trying to talk marketing like internet marketing, because that's super overdone, and there's plenty of people. We've already talked to several people about internet marketing. But this is more, like you said, marketing for everybody, because everybody needs some sort of marketing, whatever your business is. Even if you're not in business, if you're just trying to further your own career, there's marketing that needs to be done. And I think there, whatever we talk about with Ezra is going to be something that will further those efforts. So let's cut right to the chase, and let's throw it to Ezra Firestone in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
I am super excited about today's main event because I think our guest is the most unique and interesting guest we've ever had on. Ezra Firestone is known in the online world as an expert in the e-commerce store space, which he often talks about on his website at smartmarketer.com, usually in a very unique video format. But Ezra also is heavily involved in charities and co-hosts what I see as somewhat of a charity podcast with all of us listeners as the recipients, and it's called Think Act Get. Alongside his co-host and past Showdown guest, James Schramko, they discuss all things mindset and action related that help lead you to your ultimate goals, whatever they are. Joe and I had a heck of a time deciding what to narrow down and talk about with Ezra today. Lucky for us, our most recent episode of Think Act Get released at the time of this recording. Ezra and James' topic was marketing. And as discussed in round two, marketing is somewhat of an ambiguous term, and we don't want to get bogged down into the very basics of marketing. But Joe and I talked about a top level overview, and we're going to dig in deeper with Ezra. So without further ado, Ezra, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I feel really good about myself now. So thanks for that intro.
Yeah. Thank you. And like I said, we think Think Act Get is kind of a charity podcast for all of us listeners, because it feels like you guys are giving back with your knowledge. So thank you for producing that show for all of us.
I appreciate it, man. You know, it was a scary thing to put out there because it's so different than anything that currently exists in our space. And it took me being vulnerable, because I drive the content of the show in regards to what we talk about and how it's done. And it's sharing a lot of who I am with the community. Instead, and what I was doing before was basically sharing, this is how you set up a Facebook ad, not like, this is who I am and this is what I do and this is how I think and feel. So I'm very happy that it's being well received. So thanks.
Well, and I think the thought of you being a little vulnerable is maybe an understatement when you bring your family members on for this sex episode. And I'm sure that's probably the most, I don't want to say controversial, but maybe the most discussed episode that you guys have ever put out, if I had to take a wild guess.
Dude, believe it or not, the Willpower episode, which is our first episode, is our most downloaded episode, the most downloaded podcast that either of us have ever done. The sex episode gets a lot of chatter, like when I talk to people I know who listen to about it, but unsurprisingly, most folks didn't really want to engage with that content on the site and say their viewpoints and leave comments and stuff. But it is our second most listened to episode. So people are listening to it, but they're not actually commenting, which is totally fine. We don't want to pressure anyone to have any conversations open in a public forum that they don't want to have. But it is cool that people are like, because look, man, that kind of stuff really does affect your business, your relationships, your communication. Sex is a little out there, but if you listen to the episode, which is Think Act Get episode 21, I think it is. I'm not sure. It's one of our – in the 20s.
27.
27. Think Act Get episode 27. You'll be in on what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and just a quick anecdote. I was hopping in the car to drive to a meeting with one of my coworkers, and that episode was queued up on my Bluetooth and started playing over the radio. And one of the probably, I would say widely thought of inappropriate parts of the show. And I quickly had to reach across and press pause and, talk really loud and start making some scene and change the subject. So
amazing.
That one got me off guard.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, Ezra, before we dive in, since we don't usually get deep into background stories, but some of our listeners might not know you and your background story, have you been a guest on any other podcasts that really told your background story well that we might be able to direct our listeners to?
I think the Entrepreneur on Fire episode was a really good episode that kind of covered a lot of about me. If you're interested in who is this crazy dude, there was a lot of information about who I am and where I came from and why I think the way I do. And also, I did a podcast on the Infinite Pi podcast, which is PI. And that was a lot, also more of my backstory.
Okay, very good. Now, as I mentioned, Joe and I discussed the general idea of marketing in round two, both of our generic ideas of it. And before we start digging deep, can we just get you, when you hear the term marketing or you say the term marketing, what is just the very basic idea that you have in mind?
For me, when I hear the term marketing, I think movement. I think having in the perspective of a person, so moving a person in a direction through messaging, having someone take an action that you want them to take through some form of interaction with you. Now, commonly in our society and in our community, people think of marketing as folks who can generate visibility for products or services or businesses, right? Like, people think of marketing companies as the people who will generate visibility for their products and services. But I think of marketing more as the act of moving someone from one destination to another, from not knowing about a product to knowing about it, engaging with it, and purchasing it.
So at the very root of it, there's no monetary thought in marketing. That's something later on down the line.
Well, you don't have to, like, you're not necessarily selling something. You're not necessarily selling something that cost money every time you're marketing, right? Like, I may be selling a viewpoint or an idea to someone. I might be trying to convince them of a certain concept, so I'm selling ideas, but I'm not always selling something that results in someone giving me cash, right? You could be marketing ideas. You could be marketing. There's many different things you can market. You don't have to just market something that you end up selling for physical, you know, for currency.
Okay, so something Joe and I mentioned in round two was this thought that I dubbed pre-marketing, which would be laying the foundation for whatever marketing is to come in the future. And I think you mentioned in the podcast that the podcast itself kind of does that for you, helping to build some credibility or authority with people who might not have heard of you before. What other things do you do to kind of lay this foundation, this pre-marketing foundation, before you do anything else?
Well, if we look at marketing the way that you're describing it, I do many, the way that I market is the way is I put out, if you look at how I built Smart Marketer, I did 6 months of content creation and syndication. So I created videos and podcasts and blog posts, and I syndicated those out to all the different social networks like Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Google Plus, and I emailed all my subscribers about them, and I set up advertising where I bought Facebook ads and I bought YouTube ads. I didn't spend a lot of money, spent maybe $20 a day or $15 a day, and I got my content out in front of my community, and I got people engaging with me and watching my videos and commenting and having conversations with me. And then about 6 months into that process, I put out my first offer, which was a mastermind group. And then since then, I've made a bunch of offers. But the way that I pre-market, if that's what you want to call it, in all of my businesses, if you look at my skincare company, we do the same thing. We do what we call third contact direct response advertising. So we put out three contacts. We engage with people three times before we ask them for a direct response action, like purchasing something from us. Like, we'll ask them to watch our video. That's a direct response action. We'll put out videos on Facebook, and every third video we'll have a call to action to buy something. And if you don't have a budget, if you're running on a limited budget, I recommend that you do straight direct response advertising, where you're putting out an advertisement or you're paying for some kind of exposure or visibility, and you are looking for some direct response that results in a sale for you from that. We have a bit more of a budget, so we can pay for exposure and visibility a few times before we request a sale, because we know our numbers and we know that we know what the lifetime value of our customer is and that kind of thing. Am I getting too granular for you, or are you still with me?
No, that's what we're going for here.
So for someone that's just starting out, if they have whether online or offline type business or site or whatnot, it sounds like there's like some steps to it. So their first step, it sounds like, just get your name and your brand out there first. Is that right? And then worry about the action?
Here's what it takes to grow any business, product, service, agency. It does not matter what you have to sell. You need three things. You need visibility, right? Which is targeted people who would be interested in whatever it is you're offering to know that you exist, right? They have to know that you exist. And there's the ways of doing that are like Facebook advertising and search engine optimization and pay-per-click. And if you're selling physical products, like channels like Amazon, and if you're being a public figure or selling information, it can be joint ventures or people emailing for you or guest interviews on a podcast like this, right? Like, you need these channels of visibility for your product, service, or business. That comes first. And there's all kinds of visibility channels that we can talk about, which we will in just a second. Step two, once someone knows that you exist, they're aware that you exist and it's an interested person, they have to actually take you up on the offer that you're making. So that's conversion. That's landing page psychology. That's the art and science of persuasion. So step one, visibility. Step two, conversion. Step three, you have to provide a good enough experience for that person. You have to treat them well enough and have them feel good enough about the interaction with you that they want to come back and do business with you again in the future. That's repeat business. So you have those three things, and even if you only have one, even if you only have one channel for visibility, and you're able to convert those people who come and engage with you, and you're able to get them to come back and do business with you again, that is the recipe for a successful business. Now, there's two other factors that you can add to that, and tell me if you'd like me to stop.
No, keep
no, please.
Okay,
two
keep
more.
Going. Okay,
let's
cool.
hear it.
Two factors you can add to that. So the visibility channel. And then there's conversion, and along with conversion goes average order value or average transaction size. So someone is engaged, someone has found you, they've engaged with you, and now if you add a cross sell. For example, if you're selling a Elvis costume, you might say, would you also like sunglasses? Or if you're selling a Facebook advertising service, you might say, would you also like us to do Google pay-per-click advertising or whatever it is? You add some, you can add things on to increase your order size. So if you're getting 100 orders a month and right now they're worth $30 to you, I'm just using an e-commerce example, and you add a cross-sell that increases your average order value by $5, you're now making $3,500 instead of $3,000 for the same 100 orders. So average order value is another way, average transaction size. You can do things to increase your average transaction sizes like cross sells and upsells. And we can get into specific examples for specific business types because each type of business, like a physical product business or a services agency or an info marketing business, have different types of ways that you can increase the average order size. But that's another way that you can grow the business that fits right in with the conversion element. And then the fifth way is margins, right? So for example, if you buy your products in bulk in an e-commerce business, you get better margins and you've now increased the value of your business. And there's other ways to have better margins in other types of businesses as well. So the five factors, and I did not make these up, by the way, are visibility, traffic, conversion, average order value, repeat business, and margins.
So I know you talked about all the different channels, but you hear a lot of people, they say, don't try and spread yourself over every channel because then you can't target the specific audience in each of those channels. Just find one channel and just hammer that one. Is that something you believe in? It sounds like you kind of spread yourself out.
I believe in getting very good at one thing and then moving on. I believe in being channel diverse. So not being like, if you look at all the guys in the e-commerce space who were just solely reliant on Google, and then Panda and Penguin and Hummingbird came and smashed them, and they had no other channels of visibility or traffic for their businesses, and they went from $1 million businesses to $1,000 businesses overnight. That's a really heavy duty thing. So I believe in being a specialist in one area first, right? So get good at one thing. If you're going to get good at one thing, My suggestion to you is if you're going to pick one thing right now to get good at, it's Facebook advertising. And I'll tell you why. Facebook offers – so in the e-commerce space, we always only ever had query-based visibility, right? So like what I mean by query-based visibility is that we had like Google search where people are actually putting in queries and searching for things to find our products like Yahoo and Bing. And then along came channels where people were searching for physical products specifically like Amazon and Etsy and eBay and these sort of physical product channels. But it was all query based. And you could also do contextual advertising on like the Google display network and through other third party contextual advertising. And what I mean by contextual advertising, it's like the difference between someone's actually looking for something on Google or you're reading a magazine and you see an ad in it, right? That's interruption advertising. It's contextual advertising. The people who are putting that ad in that magazine know that you're a reader of, let's say, Fast Company. So they know what type of person you are because you read Fast Company. So through context, they're able to place an ad that is relevant to you, right? That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So cool. So Facebook offers multi-data point contextual advertising on a level that we have never seen before as advertising. Something like Facebook is something we only dreamed about 5 years ago. Like we can see how old someone is, what they're interested in, who they're connected to, whether they're single or married. We can see all this crazy stuff. We can get all these data points on people, and we can target people better than if they were searching for something. It is the most targeted type of advertising available to us as entrepreneurs, and we're the first generation of people who has instant access to the rest of the world. Nobody else has ever been able to do this before. We can put messages and ideas and content and products in front of any group in the world pretty much through Facebook. It's a very exciting time to live in, and there's a very small – those of you who are listening to this podcast, you are the person. You are the group of people. You are a part of this community who is doing this thing, and we're not normal. There are not a lot of us. There are not a lot of people paying attention to this kind of things. We're a very small fraction of society, and we have an opportunity to generate massive exposure for whatever we want. And there's a lot of people doing this for somewhat negative things, right? So we have to be the people to do it for positive stuff and to do it for things that we care about and causes and products and businesses that we care about. It's just a very exciting time. And if you're interested in learning about Facebook advertising, I have some resources that I recommend. The first one would be FB Ads Lab. That's FBADSLAB.com, run by my friend Jen Sheehan. She does some phenomenal Facebook advertising training there. It's like $80 a month, and you can like become an expert at Facebook ads through that training course. If you subscribe to my email list, smartmarketer.com, I am about to put out a free webinar series that covers everything that I'm doing with Facebook ads, like dark posts and custom audiences, which is where like you can go and scrape a group of people or target a group on Facebook and upload. You can just do – there's incredible things that we can do. For example, one of the things that Facebook lets us do now is upload a list of all of our customers, right, into Facebook. Facebook will match that email list with Facebook accounts, and then we can target our customers on Facebook with advertisements. Not only that, we can also create what's called a similar audience, which basically Facebook will go, it'll look through all of the users who are our customers. It will grab a list of people that have at least 6 data points in common as our customers. So it's Facebook's like, okay, here's your customers. I'm going to find everyone else on Facebook who's just like them, who hasn't bought from you yet. And then you can layer interest on top of that, which is hard to explain through audio and without actually having visual representation to show you. But basically, Facebook is incredible. The power of this tool is unbelievable. And if you're going to choose one visibility strategy to get good at, it should be Facebook ads, in my opinion. Now, of course, I also do Google pay-per-click. I do media buying. I do email drops, where I do sponsored emails, getting companies and businesses and people with large email lists to email for me. I do all kinds of, you know, Amazon ads and Etsy ads and all kinds of different advertising strategies as well for all my businesses. But I think Facebook lends itself to every single business model: physical products, information business, services, affiliate marketing. Like, there's no business model that you can't leverage Facebook to generate exposure and sales for.
Well, since you listed a few good resources that we can send people to for further in-depth Facebook talk, let's move on from Facebook then, and let's talk about, you mentioned pay-per-click, and I'll just, a little story about something that's happened to me recently that I don't know if this is something you experience and maybe our listeners experience and you might have a way to work around, but I recently purchased some concert tickets for a concert, and now everything I see on Google on the sidebar and on other websites I visit is trying to get me to buy tickets to this concert. And I know there's other people out there that have this same experience, that they're maybe paying, you know, for Google advertising or any kind of, you know, that kind of advertising, where their product that they've already sold the person on is then getting wasted on people. And I see this through Amazon too. You know, if I were to buy a basketball, next thing I know, Amazon's going to start sending me emails recommending I buy a basketball. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Do you have any way around this type of thing happening to you as an advertiser?
Yes. So you're allowed to do what's called retargeting, which is when someone comes and visits your website, you drop a cookie on their computer because you know they visited your website, and then you follow them around with ads. Now, if they end up on a conversion, like if you can set what's called a conversion action, and if they land on that page, it removes them from that retargeting group. Most people just don't really know how to set up retargeting, so they just leave everyone, even people who've already engaged with them and purchased, on that retargeting list, and they pay to retarget to them. You just have to set up your conversion goal and say to whatever retargeting company you're using, hey, once people land on this page, remove them from the retargeting group.
Oh, well, that's easy enough. So it's just a matter of learning 100% of the process instead of just 50%. makes sense. So let's talk about then, you mentioned kind of when Facebook, that it's one of the best ways to actually target the specific people you're targeting for, but it also has very detailed like analysis and statistics and things like that. When you're looking, when you're analyzing or looking at statistics for any of your marketing channels, what are the main things you look for to know if it's a success or what you need to change or anything like that?
Do you mean how do I go about targeting the people that I'm going to display my ads to?
Well, let's say so once you target things and then you have your analytics or your statistics looking at to analyze what you've done.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it. I do direct response advertising. So I have a conversion goal on every advertisement, right? Like I'm like, okay, I'm sending people to this page and I want them to enter their email address, right? So I'm sending people off of Facebook to an opt-in page, or I'm sending people off of Facebook to a sales page, right? So that's one type of advertising that I do where I have an actual goal that I want people to do, and it's either enter their email address or buy something. So I can track how many people clicked on the ad, how many people landed on the page, and then how many people took the action I wanted them to take. And I've got, and I use Facebook's conversion pixels, right? Facebook allows you to set up conversions in the back end of their advertising platform. And I also use Google Analytics to tell me I spent this much money, I had this many people do this thing, and I made this much money. So I can track it all and see whether or not it's ROI positive or ROI negative. I also do advertising where I just want someone to engage with my video. Like if you go on Facebook right now and you are on a desktop, because I only run my Facebook ads on desktops. I'm not running to iOS devices. I'm not running to mobile devices for these types of videos for a couple different reasons for this particular campaign that I'm talking about right now. But if you go to Facebook and you live in Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, or the United States, and you have some interest related to internet marketing or e-commerce, you will likely see a video from me in your Facebook newsfeed. And all I want is for you to watch my video. That is my conversion action. How many people watch this video? And that's because what I'm doing is generating massive exposure for my brand, the same way I do for my physical product businesses, for my information marketing / public figure smart marketer business. That's then my third ad. By the time I have my third ad, it will have a direct response call to action that will lead back to some kind of an offer. So it really depends on what your goal is, what you're trying to get the person to do, and you basically just track conversions. And what you're going to want to go through these Facebook ad trainings, my Facebook ad training, Jen's Facebook ad training, because the way that you optimize your ads and change your bids and change the headline of your ad or change the messaging on your landing page or do optimization of your sales process is dependent upon what you are trying to achieve and what business model you have. So it's hard for me to give a sort of overview of that or an eagle eye view of that. Basically, what you're doing is you're generating visibility for an offer, and then you're seeing what happens, and you're taking that information and making changes and doing the same thing over again. So it's just visibility and then optimization.
Okay, just to run back over that, you have the video and they watch the video, but there's no call to action in it. Is that right?
That's right. Because for me, the conversion action is them watching the video in the first place. That is the conversion action for those types of videos that are not direct, that are not asking for some direct response other than please watch this video. So, it's just, hey, I want you to engage with me because I'm trying to build up rapport and relationship and community and some sort of relationship with this group of people beyond just I want to sell you stuff. And then it turns out that I'm much more effective when I try to sell them things because we have a relationship. They've been hanging out with me on Facebook every week for the past 3 weeks.
Okay, so if they've watched the video, and these are ads, these aren't people who've liked your page or anything like that. They've just watched the video.
These are ads, and these ads are... These are ads that are targeted towards people who are fans of my page, who are not fans of my page. Interesting thing is, I generate 10 times the amount of fans through direct response ads than I do from just ads being like, please like my page.
So after they watch the video, if someone who hasn't liked your page and they watch the video and they don't like your page, Is that a lost lead? They don't see me.
No, it's fine. They don't see me again until I put up another ad in their newsfeed.
So if they watch that video, they're more likely to see your next ad. Is that correct?
If they watch the video or not, they're still going to see my next ad because I'm targeting them. These people are going to see me in their Facebook feed because they fit in my targeting demographic. Now, I am not suggesting that people start third contact direct response advertising. This is a strategy that I use because I have really solid sales funnels and I know my numbers and I know what I can spend to build a community because I know how to monetize the community after I've built it. I recommend that people start with direct response Facebook advertising. So you are sending people from Facebook to a video that's uploaded to Facebook that has some kind of a call to action that sends people to a landing page, or you're sending people from Facebook directly to a landing page that has a call to action on it. So I recommend that you start with direct response, where you're generating visibility through Facebook ads, and you are asking people to take an action, like give you their email address or buy something. I do third contact because it's a little bit more sophisticated and advanced, and you may get there after you've been doing Facebook ads for a while, but if you don't have a budget, I don't recommend you start there.
So, okay, you talked about in the episode the power of videos, and usually when I see ads, I usually just see, like you said, people, you click and you go to a landing page. But every so often, for the foundation, I'll see Dane Maxwell's video pop up every so often. Do you see more power in shooting a quick video? I mean, definitely a high quality video compared to just always trying to go toward a landing page?
Well, it depends on what the offer is, right? Like, and half the time we will share a link on our fan page directly over to a landing page, and that will outconvert a 30-second video that asks people to go to a landing page. It really is offer dependent. You should be doing both. I recommend running three types of Facebook ads. The first is where you upload a video to Facebook, you put a link to your landing page above that video, it's 30 seconds or under, and you are asking people to go to your landing page at the end of the video. The second is you upload an image and you put a link above the image and you run an ad that markets that image that has a link to the landing page. And the third is just a link to a landing page. So those are the three types of ads that you will get the most bang for your buck from: image ads, video ads, and sponsored link ads.
Okay. You also talk about how customers are the best marketing channel. So do you have a strategy for gaining a lot of referrals from your already, your strong customer base? Do you have a strategy for getting that referral funnel going?
Be awesome, number one. Like, actually deliver upon whatever it is you're offering. So nobody's going to refer you if you've done a poor job, right? So step one is to really be really, you know, to really deliver a good service. And I'm assuming that, and I'm sure that you all are, and that you are doing that. So if you have delivered a good service, then you just ask. You just send an email to your customers. Hey, if you know anyone who's interested in this thing, we do it through autoresponse. After someone's bought something from us, we actually ask them for a product, and our physical product business is a product review. So we follow up with them 7 days later. Hey, we'd love it if you could review our product on Amazon. And then we follow up with them again. We'd love it if you could review our product on Etsy. We'd love it if you would review our product on our website. So we asked our same customers to give us reviews on multiple different areas that we need reviews. But for a services-based business, it happens naturally. And you can just ask people after, you know, in the thank you email or after you've done business with them, hey, if you know someone, we'd love to be referred. But if you do a good job, people just refer you naturally. And I just get a lot of word-of-mouth referrals because we do really good work. I think that word-of-mouth is a very strong form of business because you will close the leads that come to you through word-of-mouth. If someone has heard from a friend that you're awesome and that you do really good work, they will buy from you if you have if you have the offer that they're looking for. If you build websites and one of their friends says, hey, this person built a website for me and they were great and they need a website, they will buy it from you. So it's the best type of lead you can get, but I would not rely upon that lead source as your main source of lead generation because it's intermittent and you can't really control it.
Well, what about if we go offline and say lawyers or we're accountants, we rely on referrals. How would you change your strategy based on that?
You guys rely solely on referrals?
Our firm is, Dan's been there longer than me, but we're just an example. I'm just talking about in general, a lot of accountants and lawyers that you rely on referrals from, I guess, past clients. You rely on them to refer you to someone else.
I think that's a flawed business model. I think that if I was running that type of business, I would build up some type of visibility channel that did not solely rely upon word of mouth referrals. It's not a business. It's not something that I currently do right now. None of my businesses rely on word of mouth referrals. I do, and I market many offline businesses. We do direct response advertising of some kind. We purchase advertising or we do search engine optimization. We have some visibility channel that is not just word of mouth referrals. We do get a lot of word of mouth referrals, but I do not have a good strategy for increasing the amount of word of mouth referrals that you get other than being really good at what you do and asking for them.
That makes sense. Yeah. I guess if you are really good at what you do and you get them, then you don't have to sometimes even ask for them. It just happens organically. But so I want to talk about something that you and Joe touched on a little bit, And that's with the direct response advertising, whether you're sending somebody to a landing page or a video. And I can tell just from, you know, listening to you for the past, whatever, few months since you guys have started the podcast and just talking with you now that you're, you know, you have a lot of integrity with your advertising and things like this. But even then, you have to have some sort of catchy copy that you write that, or, you know, speak on the video that goes along with what you're doing to try to convert these people. What's that fine line between, I guess, telling people maybe what you think they want to hear to then get them to convert or, you know, provide their email address or whatever it is versus telling them the truth and maybe sacrificing conversion. Does that make sense?
It does. And I fundamentally disagree with it. I think that we are taught that we need to be salesy and hypey and have all kinds of crazy stuff to say. But really what we need to do is know who we're talking to and make them an offer that's relevant. Like, you don't need to be a super copywriter or have all kinds of crazy salesy copy in order to get someone to take you up on an offer. You just have to know what they're interested in and then let them know that you have it. It comes down to having attention on who your customers are. Like, I don't do crazy salesy copy. I just say, hey, I have this thing and I think you'd be interested in it for this reason. So I'd say, hey, this is who I am. This is why I think you should listen to me. This is why this thing is important, right, for you. And here's what I have that's cool, and I think you'd love it, and check it out. Like, very straightforward communication converts much better than hypey crap, because people, especially in the internet marketing community, are over the hype. You don't end up with a good, solid customer that way. I don't use hype. I don't think you need hype. I think that it's a misconception in our community that you need to have hypey sales copy, and that straightforward communication lowers your conversion rates. It actually most of the time improves your conversion rates when you lower the hype and you just say, this is what I've got and this is why I think it's good and here's why I think, you know, here are the benefits of it and here's why I think you would like it and here's where you can get it. Like, I think that in my experience, that type of communicating, because really all marketing is communication. It's communication from one person to another or one person to a group of people about something that you have that you think they would enjoy. And I think that type of communication has always worked much better for me in all my businesses.
So do you think, I guess, fundamentally that's something that's changed over the past 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years in marketing as a whole? Or if not, what do you think the changes have been? Things that worked then that didn't work now or vice versa?
I think that hype is hype has a negative connotation. But when I think about hype, I think about getting someone enthusiastic about something, right? Hyping them up about how cool something is. And if you truly believe your thing is cool and it has a lot of benefits, like, for example, I tell people that our company is the best e-commerce development company on the planet, in my opinion, for all these reasons. We have this experience. We do it this way. We've done X, Y, and Z. Like, I firmly believe that. I don't think that's hyping anything up. I think we are that, like, we are that group, and that is what we do. And so, hyping is like generating enthusiasm in the person who is reading your messaging, and you can do that by being enthusiastic about what you're talking about. So hype doesn't have to be lying. I don't think you should ever lie in your copy or make stuff up. Like, that's not hype. That's just immoral and bad. It's not hyping. You know what I mean? Like, hyping is generating enthusiasm.
Interesting. So I guess we talked about how Facebook is your favorite channel to advertise through, but just a personal question, what's your favorite channel to be, you know, to consume as far as marketing goes? Is that also Facebook? And if not, you know, why is it something that you don't do?
I learn about most new things through Facebook, because people know that I'm interested in business and entrepreneurship and relationships and communication and all this stuff. And so I end up with ads that are very highly targeted to me. And most of the new stuff that I find out about is through that advertising channel. So I was at this Shopify event, and they kept using this phrase that I guess is popular in Canada, eat your own dog food, which means like, they were using it in the context of their employees have Shopify stores, meaning like they use this service, right? And that they're selling. And so I'm telling you to use Facebook ads, but I also get advertised too, like, invest in Kickstarter projects because they are on Facebook and they're super highly targeted to me and they were a sponsored ad. So it works on me. You know what I mean?
So do you, for that type of word that you said you heard that over and over again. Do you think that's an effective marketing strategy, is to have, like, I guess, like, this tagline that people maybe remember, like what you see all the time on TV? They all the companies have this tagline. If you're someone smaller, should you have something like that?
Yes. Do you know what my tagline is?
Dan?
Smart marketer tagline? Anyone? No?
I do not.
Hit me.
Okay. It's serve the world unselfishly and profit. I believe that that's really the only way that you can profit, is if you are in the fullest sense of the word, is if you're serving other people. And I think that you can only really truly give to other people from your own surplus, right? Like, if you don't have, you can't give. And so anyway, we can get into the psychology and philosophy behind that later. But a lot of people, that tagline is what sells them on me. They're like, yeah, I saw that tagline and I decided, you know what, I'm going to buy from this guy. Or I put that tagline everywhere. It's in every video, it's on every website, it's on every social profile. Like, wherever you go, you see that messaging. And I think consistency of messaging is what sells. Being consistent in what you say and what you stand for and what your messaging is trains people who you are and what you're about. It's branding, it's messaging, it's very important, I think.
I haven't thought of that. So, okay, let's go into, you mentioned also in the show that podcasting has been a great marketing tool for you. And you talked about a story in that in the episode of how, like, you had a customer come out of that. So,
dude, I've had a lot of customers come from our Think Act Get podcast and my different podcasts. It's been a really, really strong channel of visibility and sales for me.
What do you think's the strong point? Because you guys have a great show, or is it because they feel they trust you more, or what is it?
I have quite a few relevant offers to the listeners, right? Like, I have a services agency where, like, we will build your e-commerce store, or we will optimize, syndicate, and market your content the same way that we optimize, syndicate, and market our content. We will do your graphic design. I have a mastermind, which is like coaching and consulting. So I have, like, offers that are super relevant to the people who I'm engaging with that they are interested in. And they engage with me, and then they listen to my podcast, and they go visit my website, and they see that I'm offering all this stuff. And because they like me, and because we've spent some time together, and they trust me, and they know what I stand for, they buy from me. I think it's like it's just another visibility channel, and there's nothing extra special about it other than with a podcast, you have a much deeper relationship with your podcast listeners than you do with any other type of subscriber, because you're in their ears for hours at a time. So you build affinity with that person. You relate with them. The way that you build relationships and communication and intimacy with people is by spending time with them, by consistently relating with them. And when someone listens to your podcast, they're consistently relating with you. So you have much greater intimacy with that person than you do with someone who just watches a video from time to time or reads an email from time to time. So they're a very switched on and highly targeted group of your subscribers, and so they end up converting and taking you up on offers more than other segments of your subscriber base.
Wesley, I hope you take this as a compliment, because I fully mean it as one, but you're a different dude, and I think you know that, and you've admitted it, and there's, you know, things you do just from a lifestyle perspective and experience perspective and all these things that are different. And as you just explained, like, you being you is what's helping sell your product or sell your services or whatever it is. So just in general, what's the importance of just being yourself versus trying to be what, you know, you think you should be?
You know, it's hard. It's very easy to try to put on a persona, to try to be a certain way, to think that the way that you are isn't good enough or isn't cool enough or people aren't going to like it. But really what people want is to see you. They want to know you. They want to know what you think. They want to they want a relationship with you. And I think it is of the utmost importance that you be yourself. I mean, it sounds kind of corny and stuff, but, like, it's so true. That is what is attractive to people. That is what has people like you, is vulnerability, sharing who you are and what you think and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's very important. But yeah, I'm all, you know, wacky and stuff, but, like, there, I am not the only example there. If you look at all the different people who are leveraging Facebook ads and face-to-camera videos and podcasts and content marketing to generate visibility and sales for products and services, it's like it runs the gamut from outgoing and crazy and wild to, like, introverted and, you know, like, it's not, it's me being wild and out there is, yes, it is part of why I'm successful, because it's who I am, but it doesn't mean that anyone can't do this. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Anyone can do this is what I'm saying.
Well, I love it. And Ezra, one of the reasons we love our format of our podcast, when we bring guests on to talk about something specific, we don't necessarily branch off too far. So that gives us the opportunity to bring our guests on again to talk about a completely different topic. And I hope, you know, we've enjoyed this marketing conversation, but I hope you'd accept our invitation to come on in the future and talk about something completely different. Because, like we said, you have completely different views on a lot of the things that we might, you know, get from other people. So hopefully, we hope to have you on.
That you guys, I appreciate you having me on your show and wanting to spend some time with me. And I appreciate the listeners, you listener, for listening in and hanging out with us. And I'm always, as you can tell, I like to talk. So I'm happy to come back and talk. And I enjoy this. And you know, I tend to really get excited about stuff and go on. So if there was stuff that you wanted to cover that we didn't get to because ran out of time, I'll definitely come back.
Well, very good. We'll definitely take you up on that. And one more time, where's the best place to you know, find out what you're doing and more about you?
Check me out at smartmarketer.com. It's spelled just like it sounds, smartmarketer. And I'm like sharing my research there. I do blog posts on and video posts on like mindset and strategies and tactics and e-commerce and all kinds of different stuff over there. So if you're interested in that, please check me out. I'd love to get to know you and hope to engage with you again soon.
Where you serve the world unselfishly and profit, and you eat your own dog food.
That's right.
Thank you so much for coming on, Ezra.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.